हरे हे ओ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकर वावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so now we're dealing with the illusory potency of Maya, how it's a prison for the conditioned souls. Sutra 23, the material world is like a prison where souls who hate the Supreme Personality of Godhead are confined. There the souls are bound with many shackles, such as the material bodies in which they dwell. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Mantra 17, the temporary material body is certainly a foreign dress. In Bhagavad Gita 2.20 clearly says that after the destruction of the material body, the living entity is not annihilated, nor does he lose his identity. The identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless. On the contrary, it is the material dress that is formless and that takes a shape according to the form of the indestructible person. No living entity is originally formless, as is wrongly thought by those with a poor fund of knowledge. But in any case, the material bodies of all animals and men are foreign to the living entity. They change according to the living entity's desire for sense gratification. So here we see also now a twist in the perception, is that we take it that, you know, the soul and the spiritual we can't see, but the forms, the material forms, then are, we consider very, solid substance. But here it's saying it's actually the opposite. It's the soul who's not formless. And these material bodies, they're the formless ones, because all it is they're made up of atoms. Remember we were discussing about that, is everything is all atoms. There's all atoms, means all the material elements are made up of atoms. Atom is the smallest particle of an element that there can be. So all those are there, and it's, you know, nondescript, just plain the same stuff, right? So then that, according to the desire of the living entity, then it is grouped around the mind, right, around the subtle body, and that creates the form, right? So it's not the body, probably gives the example, it's not the body that's the doctor, it's the soul that's the doctor. The body just, therefore, is it collects all that, that means by the arrangement of the modes of nature, just the all the atoms are collected around the subtle body of the living entity, thinks it's a doctor, and it looks like one. You understand? But it's just matter that doesn't have any distinct shape. You know, we say, oh, it's a brick, or it's, you know, a tree, or that's only because it has been put together like that by the modes of nature. Otherwise, all the elements that everything's made out of would just be just atoms. Does that make sense? So actually the material world is the formless one. And the soul is the actual form. Right? So depending upon his consciousness, that's what creates the other form. So when the consciousness is real, then the form that is generated is real. But when the consciousness is not real, when it's mundane, then the form that is generated is also illusory. Does that make sense? It means it's there, it exists, and it's in that shape, but it's not actually that, because at any time that could be taken and put back with the elements. You know, does that make sense? Yes.
You see this manifest revealing itself Yeah.
You know, so in the material way, you can see his concept of the consciousness directing the gross.
Yes. Yes. Yes, you could say. But then also then there's the element is it's because it's still the, yeah, it's just the manifestation of the consciousness. Then you also see is that, yeah, by the consciousness, then they'll have different moods, different forms. As they change that consciousness, then the forms change, their dress changes, their attitude changes, you know. But also just things of the body that are there, then if they're once they're not connected with the body, then the form just changes. You know what I'm saying? So it's not actually that shape. It's just by the modes of nature holding all those atoms together in that form. Right? Does that make sense? The atoms are put together into the different elements, the elements into the particular form. So otherwise it all goes back to just the atoms. Right? So when everything's destroyed in the universe, it just means everything goes back to atoms. Then primary creation, then it's all brought together again into the 24 elements, and then from there the particular forms are created in the secondary creation. Does that make sense? Yes? Is it understood the use of this stuff? Yes. Dead part in it. There's no living entity in it. There's no consciousness. Yes, but that's him. That's not the matter. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. You know, or you have the body, because the soul is there, then it appears to be alive. But the body is not alive. Right, life means there's a soul inside. Right, or is it like that? One company, soul inside. Right. Does that make sense? So as soon as that's removed, then it doesn't. It's not living. It doesn't act. It just, in other words, it just moves with the modes of nature and goes back to whatever elements it came from. You know what I'm saying? Earth goes back to earth, water to water, fire to fire, like this. Does that make sense? Yes?
Srila Prabhupada says mental is already, it is formless, but it takes shape according to the real form of indestructible person.
Not the real form.
Yeah.
According to the form. Not the real form. According to the form of the indestructible person. In other words, the form is the consciousness. So the living entity identifies as a particular species of life. Therefore, then the material energy manifests around that. Gita mentions that. Because of the consciousness, then they have a particular interest, how they want to see, taste, smell, touch, all that. Then the senses will be grouped around the mind and therefore the form around that. And then in this way, then you get the form. So it's what the living entity thinks it is.
But the real form, Swarup, of the living being, it's always with him.
Yes, it's always with him, but the problem is he doesn't recognize it, so he doesn't get the benefit. Does that make sense? See, there's two points here. There's always remember Krishna, never forget. So the point you're bringing up is very good for always remember Krishna. But the problem is except for when one's generally sitting with friends who have a similar mentality and discussing such things, then there's a remembrance. Or now and again, in one's own sadhana or going walking about, one may see something and reminds one of Krishna and things like that. So those times, then remembrance is quite good and quite developed. So that approach works very well. But then what about the rest of the day and everything else? then we're forgetting Krishna. Why? Because we think that those things around us actually have substance when they don't. Right? This only substance is there is the living entity's consciousness that that's what they are. And two, is that the Lord has entered it, so actually what you're looking for is the Lord. You're looking for the Lord's association. But you're not looking towards the Lord. You're looking towards some mundane object of attachment. And thinking that that is what's giving you that feeling, when it's actually Krishna's potency, because he's entered it, that's what gives you the feeling. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why one should know both. We see if you were here when we were discussing Bhagavatam. So when we were discussing Bhagavatam, then there were a lot of the Sandarbha verses were there. And for Jiva Goswami, there's no problem in the same sentence moving back and forth between rasa and tattva. Because he sees the non-difference. Based on the tattva, therefore, there's rasa. Rasa is the manifestation of the tattva. So there's not a problem we're working with both. The idea that sometimes, well, this is all very mechanical, but the point is you're in the material world because of our own mechanics. Does that make sense? So that's therefore the... You know, it's like you have... Okay. Let us say you have a piece of mud from Brahmanda Ghat sitting in a very nice place on your shelf. So what is actually special about that mud? Is it that form of the mud? No. It's that Krishna ate that mud and the whole pastime that went with it. That's what's special. Otherwise, so much mud is there. He happened to eat this mud. It's not necessarily that much different than from some other mud in Vrindavan. But that mud's special. Why? Because he ate that. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So what's special is because Krishna's involved. So in this way, then, its form and its Krishna conscious value and Krishna and all that are non-different. Right? But the problem is if you just see the mud, then even it's connected to Krishna, but you're not going to get as much benefit as if you understand its actual connection. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise then we're looking at some other element of it. It's connected to Krishna, but that element is always there with dressing Krishna. And so you're putting, claws and different pieces and jewelry and all that. We're looking at the aesthetics and the balance and the color and all that. Because we're dressing Krishna, therefore you get, it is devotion. But at the same time is our inspiration for that may not actually be Krishna. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's directed at Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. So in other words, the activity and the results of the activity are for Krishna. But the element of why you're doing that, why one's dressing the deity instead of taking out the garbage, you know what I'm saying? It means Krishna's garbage is also service to Krishna. I never see on the internet anybody fighting over taking out the garbage. Because you'll take out the garbage and will anybody notice? No. You dress the deity, will anyone notice? That's right. All 50 devotees in the temple, 100 devotees, 6,000 at the festival, they're all going to notice. You're going to notice if you take out the garbage? Not at all. You're going to notice if you clean and scrub the kitchen and wash the pots? They're Krishna's pots for cooking his lunch? No. No one's fighting over those things. Not at all. Is anyone fighting over who can set up the Bhagavatam class and write the shloka on the board? No. It's who gives the class. Why? If it's all service to Krishna, it's because it's in connection with our conditioned nature. So we're engaging the conditioned nature. So because it's engaged, then it's like iron and fire. So it's as good as. But the problem is that as long as that focus is consciously is to please Krishna, then that full result is gained. But if it's more just it looks nice, it looks good and all that, result is less. It's still devotion, it's still the Krishna, but you haven't noticed the person that you're working with. You know what I'm saying? If you had a friend who was helping you dress, right? And if they just went about it in such a way that they're just looking at the clothes and here and checking this and that, they're not even interacting with you or looking, you know, how would you feel? It's nice, they're doing it, but you would be very neutral and very formal and just sit there and get dressed. You know, and then afterwards then they'll go, oh, hey, you look good. And then they're interacting with you. Then you start the nice reciprocation. So therefore, when darshan is there, everyone's looking. So then the reciprocation is there. But now someone's going like that, looking at you, and, well, I don't know, hey, I think maybe this works better. You know, what do you, you know, like this, and going through, they're interacting with you. You understand? You see the difference that we're talking here? So what we're reading here, this Upanishadic approach, is how one cuts that. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, why is it there? Why are they fighting over who dresses the deity? Mother Yashoda dresses a deity. Anyone else is fighting? No. Why? They're assisting Mother Yashoda. So it doesn't matter. One person dresses. Either they're chosen, they happen to be there first, they're the best at it, whatever may be the criteria, then one person is dressing. Everybody else who wants to dress should assist. But no, they have to dress themselves because they can't work with this one, can't work with that one. Their style is different and all that. But what's that got to do with Krishna, technically? That you want to dress Krishna, that's the devotional part. But the actual process of dressing may not necessarily be. You know what I'm saying? But it's dovetailed. Like that. That's why we use the term dovetailed. Therefore, it's brought in line with Krishna, you get the spiritual benefit. But Krishna points out to Nanda Baba, the more you're conscious of what's going on, the more benefit you get. Therefore, we do it, it's nice, we feel inspired. You know, our Krishna consciousness advances. But, you know, Mother Yashoda, the gopis do the same thing, they're in ecstasy. Why? They're doing the same thing, they're not doing something different. You're dressing Krishna, you know, they're dressing Krishna, there is no difference. It's the same person. But their result, you know, maybe, you know, Mahabhav, right? You know, well, ours is just, you know, that was nice. You know what I'm saying? Why? The only difference is the consciousness. The activity is the same. We're afforded the same opportunity. We can cook for Krishna. Radharani cooks for Krishna. Rohini cooks for Krishna. Mother Yashoda cooks, but much of the time she's making arrangements of the whole house, so just someone cooks, someone prepares the bath, someone does this. Or sometimes she wants to cook, so everybody else does all the other things. You know what I'm saying? We get to cook, we get to dress, we get to clean, we get to, you know, all these different things we get to do. All the stuff of the spiritual world. Does this make sense? So that's why I said, always remember, never forget. So all these technical, metaphysical are generally in the realm of never forget. Because much of the time that takes up more of our day. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why it's there. Because sometimes it's not, you know, it's not appreciated because, one, it's not practical, but it's the most practical. Or it doesn't have a taste, it's too dry. But that's because we're not applying it in our life. We're not applying it to Krishna. Right? Like that. Because otherwise, then, the pastimes will have taste, but they won't have as much taste as they could have if one takes out the anchor. Right? Otherwise, one's rowing the boat all night, and so one's getting all the bob of rowing the boat. You know, the splashing the water, the experience, you know, all the guys working together. You know, everything's there, but the boat's not really going anywhere. Right? So that's why the anchor needs to be pulled out. Does that make sense? So this balance, this is what's unique about our acharyas. They have no problem going from a point of you know, high-end rasa to a very technical point in the philosophy, all in one moment. you know? Does that make sense? Radharani's surrender in Aslishava Padatampinashtumam, you know, is the same element that's mentioned in Manu Samhita, how the wife deals with the husband, right? Because you're still dealing with male-female thing. Is this still the same principle of that actually, if we want to break this here, is that actually I think I'm the master, but actually I'm the servant. So I should be, as a maidservant, serving the energy rather than trying to lord it over. And so then that breaks the need for that middle one. They're both obvious, right? Because the form is the obvious medium. But if you want to attach yourself to the actual spiritual form, but when it's still attached to the material form, you break the material form by dissolving it. You know, it says the material world just dissolves. Why is it dissolved? Because you start to just see Krishna. Right? The forms just dissolve back into their elements. You still see the form, but it's not what it normally is seen. It's not the substance anymore. Right? It's simply the vehicle for carrying the mood or the consciousness of those around you. Does that make sense? So then that person, then when they come in contact with that, you know, direct devotional activities, then what benefits they get are, you know, greatly increased. Does that make sense? Because otherwise what we saw is that we talk these things, if it gets too technical, we lose everyone's attention, right? Then if it's, you know, this technical but with the practical, generally everybody holds their attention. Then when it starts to go a little bit into the rasa aspect, then again everybody kind of perks up a little bit, right? So it's a little bit technical or a little bit rasa. But when it gets right into the rasa, everybody's gone, just as if it gets really technical. Because we went through the Shikshastakam, the last three or four verses are dealing in bhava, mahabhava, all this thing, everybody was gone, you know? I could have just put paper cutouts here and I would have went to the same class. You know, as sometimes you get into these Sandarbha verses, it was non-different. So the point is the capacity for rasa is reduced because the capacity for material entanglement is great. So as you reduce that vision, that material vision, you increase the prospect of spiritual vision. You know what I'm saying? Because if you get right into rasa, you can get into stuff that people who like to sit around and be rasik, they won't be able to handle. They'll immediately go into deism and other things like that. Immediately. They immediately separate it off, oh, it can't have these qualities, this and that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's so much there that, in other words, you have to balance the rasa and the tattva. So, because the tattva can only be explained up to a certain point, as given by Jiva Goswami, he is the greatest exponent of tattva. Right? That, the Goswamis had written books that were so much on the other side that they were not revealed. So then, behind Sanatan Goswami's samadhi, there's a grunta samadhi, there's a book samadhi. Those books that they wrote, they buried them there. Because they go so far, no one would be able to appreciate. Because what happens is you just take it as mundane. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the elements of rasa, they hint at the form of it enough that you can appreciate the taste. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's a limit there of what can be discussed. Why? Because there's a limit on how far we can discuss the other side. That's the point. The acharyas can go either way. And it's most clearly seen as just Jiva can go back and forth in one thing. He'll discuss it in the the tattva, and then in the same sentence just project it right into the rasa and show how what it was doing over there. Does that make sense? You know, we were discussing before, we used to discuss a lot more on the masculine and feminine principle. But that's exactly how Krishna and his internal potency interact. And we're you know, expanding, or, you know, atomic particles of that internal potency, so we're still in the same category as feminine. We're just, you know, how you say, assistant feminine. So there's Krishna with, you know, masculine as the subject, and the feminine as the object. And then the jivas, being those particles, then function as instruments. So instruments means they're acting according to the desire. Let's say the activity, let's put it this way, the activity of the subject, but the desire of the object. So they're having to be able to accommodate two things at once. Right? That's why this is so important for us, the chinta beta beta tattva. Krishna doesn't have to think about this stuff. You know what I'm saying? His internal potency doesn't have to think about this stuff. You know, does that make sense? We have to think about it, because that's our position. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay, in the purport to Mantra 11, it is stated, and this is, you know, Prabhupada's purports. Since the creation of the material world, everyone has been trying to attain a permanent life. But the laws of nature are so cruel that no one has been able to avoid the hand of death. No one wants to die, nor does anyone want to become old or diseased. The law of nature, however, does not allow anyone immunity from old age, disease, or death. Nor has the advancement of material knowledge solved these problems. Material science can discover the nuclear bomb to accelerate the process of death, but it cannot discover anything that can protect man from the cruel hands of old age, disease, and death. Right? As we were going by the shackles that they're being bound. So he's saying is that it's the prison, it's the material world, and so here then, in this birth, death, old age, and disease, these are more shackles. Right? The three modes of nature, these. Then in purport to Mantra 14, it is stated, in material nature, everyone is under the stringent laws of matter and must pass through six stages of existence: birth, growth, maintenance, production of byproducts, deterioration, and finally, death. No one in contact with material nature can be beyond these six laws of transformation. Therefore, no one, whether demigod, man, animal, or plant, can survive forever in the material world. The duration of life varies according to species. Lord Brahma, the chief living being within this material universe, lives for millions and millions of years, while a minute germ lives for some hours only. But no one in the material world can survive eternally. Things are born or created under certain conditions. They stay for some time, and if they continue to live, they grow, procreate, gradually dwindle, and finally vanish. According to these laws, even the Brahmas, of which there are millions in different universes, are all liable to death either today or tomorrow. Therefore, the entire material universe is called Martyaloka, the place of death. Material scientists and politicians are trying to make this place deathless because they have no information of the deathless spiritual nature. This is due to their ignorance of the Vedic literature, which contains full knowledge confirmed by mature transcendental experience. Unfortunately, modern man is averse to receiving knowledge from the Vedas, Puranas, and other scriptures. So again, we're going back to this ignorance, right? Those who dislike the Supreme Lord. As long as that's there, then there's always going to be problem. One is going to be bound to the material world. To that degree that one appreciates Krishna, to that degree one's free, right? Because material world is for those who aren't seeing Krishna, right? And spiritual worlds are for those who do. So to that degree that you're seeing Krishna, to that degree you're actually not in the material world. Right? Does that make sense? And, of course, the inverse is also true. Okay, any questions on this? Sutra 24. Because it is the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the material nature has neither beginning nor end. According to Sutra 12, the same applies for the individual souls. It's a note there. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because it is the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the material nature has neither beginning nor end. In the Smriti Shastra it is said, please know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His material energy are both beginningless. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1 it is said, O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because He is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifest universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And He is independent because there is no other cause beyond Him. It is He only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By Him even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water, only because of Him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon Him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon Him, for He is the absolute truth. Okay. So the material nature has no beginning or end, but it doesn't mean that its manifestation is not temporary. Right? Just so the soul is eternal, material world is eternal. But the soul is always the soul, but the material energy will be manifest in forms and all that, or not. Right? So therefore we see a beginning and end. So the living entity who then involves himself also gets caught up in this. He's shackled to this temporariness. So then, that brings us to, although it is neither beginning nor end, matter is situated within the confines of time and space. The author describes this in the following two sutras. Sutra 25. Yes? Directly and indirectly means He has expanded into everything through His potencies, so His potencies are actually taking care of everything. But at the same time, they're His potencies, so He can be fully conscious of them. You know what I'm saying? You're riding the bicycle, and it's just going on. Your potency is doing it. And you're thinking of other things. But if you want, you can be actually conscious of your foot on the pedals, your hands on the handlebars, or... You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, it just goes on, because material energy knows what to do. She's already been authorized and given the potency and the direction, what she's supposed to do. So she does that, but it's His potency. Therefore, through His potency, she's doing everything. Right? So He can be conscious of that if He wants. At the same time, He can be unconscious and just absorbed in His own pastimes. So the conscious means He's entered everything. Right? In everything, between everything. The Brahman, Parabrahman aspect, the Paramatma aspect. But then there's also, he's not aware of it, means as his Bhagavan aspect, that he's, you know, performing his pastimes with his devotees. But the point is if he wants, he can be aware of these others. Right? That's why, you know, he'll be talking with Arjuna and all that, as, you know, his friend and all that, and talking in this way, joking with him, oh, you want to go out and you want to make some new friends in that by going out and seeing who's in the army and all that. You know, but then Arjuna gets bewildered, and so then he asks Krishna to instruct. So then he takes on the mood of he's God, right? He's the Adi Guru. So then in that he's aware of everything. It's not just he's absorbed in the pastime. Does that make sense? But he can do that simultaneously. He can be in the pastime and at the same time conscious of whatever would be appropriate for that pastime. So that's the whole point, is that that ability to interact and be conscious. Right? So that's requires training. Right? God does it naturally. Right? The impruner potency is always, you know, conscious and active. But the jivas tend to have where their consciousness goes that's different. Does that make sense? Okay. So it said before was okay? It didn't bother you or anything? No, it's okay? Sure. See, because you don't, generally these things are sacrosanct. You don't touch on these subjects. But the point is that sometimes we become unaware, and then that subject loses some enthusiasm or taste. That satsang isn't the same as it was the year before, and there's more discussions of other things, and people get too busy to come and distracted by other things. So these topics are to ensure that it not only maintains, but it should increase. It should get better. So if it's not getting better, then these are ways that it's getting distracted. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
You see, Vasudeva Sattva, the stage in which we can experience consciousness, in which consciousness and experience can be at the same time.
Consciousness and?
And experience.
Or consciousness and experiences at the same time. Basically, what would be the purpose of consciousness and experience being at the same time?
No, you explain about the capacity to experience something in an action, but at the same time be able to...
Yeah, it means conscious of what needs to be conscious of. Generally, we tend to, when we become conscious, then we forget the interactive part, right? And those who are interactive, many times, they're not necessarily always conscious. So one will say is very ritualistic or robotic, the other will say is very emotional or sentimental. But the Vedic standard is that you can do both at once. You're conscious of what you're supposed to be conscious of, means the action itself, everyone involved, what is the appropriate thing to being done. And then the experience is going on simultaneously. But if you switch, so the experience is the result of action, right? So if I switch my consciousness to the experience, that means the experience is disconnected from its source, right? And since it's an energy, it will stop. You know what I'm saying? Electricity is coming from the generator. So as long as the generator is running, there is electricity. But if I focus on the electricity so that the generator is not running, the electricity disappears. Right? So that's why then one is always in the present. Right? And that comes as a side. Because if we're just trying to focus on that, we're trying to enjoy it. But that's where it disappears. Because we're stopping what generates it. You know what I'm saying? And that's taken as a given, that without it being based on our identity, you know, proper identity as servant of Krishna and appropriate activity for that situation once in, then the action is not going to get a result. So that's why sometimes they can also just talk about Chid and Ananda, because it's already accepted that Sat is in place. Right? Because if the Sat is not in place, it will be mundane. Mundane knowledge and activities, mundane experience, right? But if it's spiritual, then it will be the other way, right? So that's why the eternality of the soul has been established. That's there, because otherwise then people will think, I don't exist. Then after that, then you get into the knowledge and the happiness aspect, because you don't want the active knowledge and activity and happiness to be linked to the mundane. Right? Because if you say you're eternal, then automatically you're not going to link that to the mundane, because it's obviously temporary. But as soon as I get into knowledge and happiness, that I can easily connect to the mundane. So I have to be situated in into the spiritual concept. You know what I'm saying? Then these other aspects will work properly, because based on your identity, everything else comes, right? From the masculine principle comes the feminine. Right? The feminine is dependent upon the masculine. If the masculine principle is mundane, then the knowledge and activities and results will be mundane. If the masculine principle is spiritual, right? Then the knowledge, actions, and results will be spiritual. Does that make sense? So this is why these technicalities, they're interrelated. Okay, so that therefore one is the explanation of the other. So you see that that's why it works that way. Then there's how that manifests. You know what I'm saying? And so that's where we look at, you know, tradition and, you know, recommended form and other things like that. Does that make sense? So these things, yes. Is there interplay of modes?
Like Rubens is being still and just observing, of course, to interact on the material platform, has to be passion. And something needs to act, so not others, so it's naturally you are active or.
In this, because then you're dealing with knowledge, it depends on how you're defining it. Because in this example, being related to what we were just discussing, the ignorance would be your platform of observation. That if you're in ignorance, whatever you observe, you see as matter. Therefore, your mode of passion, which is going to be your activities, it's going to generate your experiences coming from the mode of goodness. Right? That's going to be thrown off. Because the perception of the material world is ignorance, while the spiritual world is servant of Krishna. You understand? Sandini, or sat principle, transforms into ignorance. Right? The chit, or knowledge, that's passion. And your ladini, or ananda principle, that is goodness. Does that make sense? So when the chit and the hladini, those are mixed, in other words, you're performing the activity to please Krishna, that's bhakti. Then you'll get good result from the sandini. Right? In other words, if you've already taken that step, I identify as servant of Krishna, therefore I will perform my activities in Krishna's service, then the sandini potency, or where the sat element is, or the identity, that will become greater. You'll get realization. So that means then your quality of your knowledge and application will be greater. Therefore, the result is greater. That combination will give greater realization. Therefore, it always increases. So it's the sandini who's always expanding things in that way, because that's your existence. Right? So in the spiritual world, that's always increasing. Or in the material world, that's also always increasing. She gives you realization more and more how you are this body. Yeah, that's ignorance. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. But in the spiritual world, it's illuminating. It's yoga maya, so it connects you to the Lord. It brings you closer and closer to the Lord. And the mahamaya takes you farther and farther away. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why these things, it's a science. You understand it, then you can start to use it to advantage. It still takes practice and time. It doesn't happen overnight. You know. But it does give the results. It starts to break down the material attachment. It means you still may be a habit attached to it, but before it was like, well, yeah, it's Maya, but you know, I can use it in Krishna's service and you know, all that too. It's Maya, it's not really very usable in Krishna's service, but I'm still somehow or another still inclined towards it. You know, to the point where Krishna is the important element of it, so why do I need to look for Krishna in this attachment? You know what I'm saying? If the taste that I'm looking for in that attachment is actually Krishna, why do I have to look there? You know what I'm saying? The little kid loves to go out, you know, and look under rocks and find snails and crabs and stuff. So he gets a taste out of that. But if he understands that's Krishna, why does he have to go find snails and frogs and that? He could do something more direct. You know what I'm saying? So as long as you don't see its actual full connection to Krishna, the tendency is to work with it. Duty one's own need, right? And if one is in a position where having come to that realization that he doesn't need it and it's only Krishna, then if he's in a position where it's natural for him to continue that activity anyway, you know, let's say he's a grihastha, anyway so therefore he sees Krishna in it, and so there he has no problem. So as a materialist, he has no problem being a grihastha. Right? As a sadhaka, he has no problem being a grihastha because he's using it as the medium to see Krishna and work out all his material desires. As the Paramahamsa, he has no problem being a grihastha. Right? Because the one is happy to not see Krishna. The other one is happy to use it as a means to find Krishna. And the other one, having found Krishna, what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? So that's why the form is both important and not important. That's why you see is these great, you know, Paramahamsa devotees can act as such great grihasthas and kshatriyas and brahmas. They can get out there and Arjuna can say all the things and Bhima can be so chivalrous. And why? Because that taste is Krishna, that chivalry is Krishna, that nobility is Krishna, that virtue is Krishna. You know, and so this is the form. The religious king is the manifestation of that, you know, morality and justice and all those different things. You know, victory. So therefore, he's playing the role perfectly. Otherwise, you only see it, you know, in the gross materialist. He thinks he's the best. And so in between, they get a little sheepish. You know, don't want too much of this. And then they get no taste. And then they don't move forward. And they don't know what's going on. So they were moving forward in detaching themselves, but they weren't attaching to Krishna. They're detached. Okay, family's bad, you know, so then, you know, Krishna's not there like that. But the problem is now what are you going to use to serve Krishna? You know, because you say, well, I have my sadhana. Great, then sit down and 3 lakhs around. That's what Haridas Thakur did. But if you're still going to be the grihastha, then how are you going to deal with that? Then you have to use it as a medium to see Krishna. You have to be able to use these technical points to dissolve it, but at the same time be able to work with it. Because most of them, they dissolve it, oh, I don't need this, then they won't work with it. Therefore, in the past, so many so-called, you know, vanaprastas, like that. You know what I'm saying? And then after a while, then they're back in grihastha ashram again. Why? Because they actually didn't work out. They develop the aspect of, you know, there's something wrong here, the ability to observe it, but it's based on repulsion rather than knowledge, right? Because repulsion is based on attraction and repulsion, so that's passion. So renouncing it when they still need to use it, that's renunciation of the mode of passion, right? Renunciation of the mode of goodness means I don't need this, but if it's my duty, I still work with it. And because I can see Krishna in a relationship, I can work with it better, actually, than the grossly attached person. And way better, of course, than the person who's trying to be detached. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Sometimes there is this feeling.